Welcome to the Friday Night Clive podcast with me, Clive Payne. In this podcast, we look back at the amazing charities, organisations and people we have chatted to over the past few months, all of whom have interesting and important stories to tell. Schizophrenia is something that we've heard of but probably know very little about. It's often misunderstood as a mental health condition, but what is it really and what are its symptoms and treatments and who is likely to be a sufferer? Is it just anybody or certain age groups? Joining me on the line now to talk about that is Sandra Vaughan, who's the CEO of Dudley Mind and a great friend of ours here on Friday Night Clive. Good evening, Sandra.
Hi, Clive.
Lovely to talk to you again after what has been quite a long time, but thank you for spending some time with me this evening. First of all, before we start talking about schizophrenia, tell me a little bit about Dudley Mind for anybody who is unfamiliar with it.
Yes, we actually won't be Dudley Mind after Wednesday because we're changing our name to Black Country Mental Health. Our services will still be the same, so I'll still tell you what we do. We've been supporting people across the Black Country for some time, but particularly since the pandemic struck. A lot of the work we do is around peer mentoring groups, so supporting people with different mental health conditions, a lot around anxiety and depression, a lot of face-to-face work because we've worked all the way through the pandemic, and also some online work through Zoom, the ever-popular Zoom. We also run an ecotherapy project because we know that gardening and being out in the fresh air is really good for people. We run a couple of exercise groups, a walking group, and also a 0 to 5K group in Wolverhampton, Jolly Joggers. Nice. And we deliver a lot of training to companies and to individuals because we want to really dispel the stigma around mental health. And obviously, with something like schizophrenia, there's a massive stigma.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was saying at the beginning. People, it's often misunderstood. We hear people talking about mental health issues, you know, more so even now. But it has been, you know, for a long period of standing. But a lot of the stigma is down to ignorance and lack of understanding about, you know, different aspects of people's mental health. Now, obviously, we're going to talk about schizophrenia. What is it, Sandra, and what are its symptoms? If I was working in a busy office, and how would I know if somebody was experiencing schizophrenia, for example?
The problem is, Clive, I think it's potentially dangerous sometimes to have in our mind fixed ideas of what somebody might be displaying. Schizophrenia comes under the umbrella term of psychosis. Mm-hmm. So obviously there are psychotic symptoms often, but also if I tell you that around 1 in 100 people at some point in their lives might have symptoms of that, and that could relate to medication they were taking, an illness, a physical illness. We know that sometimes people with dementia get psychotic symptoms. It can also be, you know, from traumatic experiences.
Right.
There's lots of reasons, and not one defining way that people develop it. However, I mean, some of the things around acute episodes of schizophrenia might be the paranoia, so feeling suspicious and fearful. Mm-hmm. And to be fair, we can all get a little bit paranoid at times, mm-hmm. depending on how we feel. You know, if we're low in mood, that can be a massive thing. It can be worrying about what other people might be doing, you know, their motives. Mm-hmm. And I guess in a way that could relate to something that might have happened to somebody in the past. Obviously, with schizophrenia, there are the things around hallucinations, delusions, and thought disorder. So with hallucinations, somebody might start to hear voices or see things that other people can't see. Or the one that I feel is particularly fearful and terrifying, tactile hallucinations, where somebody feels something or someone is touching them.
Mm-hmm.
I base that on working in a unit where somebody experienced being raped on a regular basis. So I think, you know, I could see the terror that she found. People might find it difficult to concentrate.
Right.
You know, so it's, A lot with mental health is around changes in behaviour. The thing with schizophrenia is, and it's my one of my pet hates, is that people are called schizophrenics because that's a terrible label. To give somebody that label and say, you're a schizophrenic. You know, I think saying that somebody has a diagnosis of schizophrenia or is living with schizophrenia. The other thing is that sometimes people buy into a bit of a myth with schizophrenia. You know, they get upset because they've got the diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And then they feel that, you know, their life might be over.
But it's not.
Earlier on, I was actually watching something around hearing voices, something in Denmark, by a guy who does a lot of training in paranoia in this country, Peter Bullimore. And he actually said that when he was diagnosed with schizophrenia, he was told by the psychiatrist, you'll have to give up work, you won't be able to do anything, just go home. And he challenged that. And that unfortunately is a bit of a myth for people with different mental health conditions, and schizophrenia is no different. Mm. You know, sometimes people are able to have really good quality of life, carry out, you know, very responsible jobs. So it's degrees. Yes, some people might find that they can't work. Some people, a very small percentage, might end up in the residential care.
Sure.
But that's a small number.
Yes.
You know, we may know people who have schizophrenia, and we wouldn't know.
No, that's
because
right.
There's no signs.
But you see, where I'm coming from is that, going back to that scenario of a busy office, if somebody is experiencing this, but in order for them to get support, you know, we always say, we ask people, are you okay? And we should never be afraid of doing that. Now, that may not be possible for somebody that's experiencing schizophrenia, but clearly, if you've got a friend or a relative in your family that is showing some changes in their behavioural traits, then, you know, they may not realise it themselves, but it's up to somebody else, I would have thought, to say, you know, look, is everything all right? And if they say, no, they then describe some of the things that you've just described me, then that alarm bell starts ringing and you think, right, you know, then there's now time for professional intervention.
Well, and that's quite right. And I think it is, obviously, we want people to be asking that question, but to be prepared for an answer. Mm. That may not be a positive answer.
No, that's very
true. We need to pursue that further. And it is that noticing sometimes that somebody might be withdrawing from normal activities or normal work in an office or a company, whereas somebody might have been really helpful at one time and supportive.
Yeah.
They suddenly might shut themselves off. They may try to start to isolate themselves from people, and their whole behaviour, the way they speak, might have changed completely.
Sure.
And it's other people who may notice something. But sometimes, Clive, in a busy environment, people don't actually notice.
No, I suppose not. I mean, what age do these symptoms start to appear? You know, can it happen in children, or is it usually, you know, in older adults? As you were saying earlier on, it can be in much older adults. But is it any particular age group?
Well, if we think about sort of early teens, like about 16, maybe up to, I don't know, about 25, 30.
Mm.
Early intervention teams who work with first-stage psychosis often work with from something like 13 or 14-year-olds up to around 35 or 40. So, yeah, people later on in life, you know, in the 70s might suddenly develop it, but that would be more unusual. I think in the past we've heard of people who have sort of dropped out of university, and people have said they've had a breakdown. And sometimes they've found they've been diagnosed with schizophrenia, because we know stress is really bad for schizophrenia. You know, and if somebody has a diagnosis, then they need to try and keep away from stressful situations. The problem is that sometimes the symptoms, you know, hallucinating and delusions, because with delusions, it doesn't matter if you show somebody the proof that it's not true what they believe. You will not change that belief. So if somebody believes that their telephone's being tapped or they're being followed or under surveillance, you will not be able to change that.
No.
So how do
we go about diagnosing this and treating it then? What's that first step?
Well, the first step is always going to be to go to the GP, and they obviously then will pass through to other services, the mental health services. However, I mean, if it's a really a crisis situation, then often people will go to A&E where the mental health team will be called. And in very difficult situations, sometimes the only option is really to call paramedics and the police, because obviously, you know, the one thing is if that person is a risk to themselves, because if they don't understand what's happening to them and they believe it's real, you know, then we have to safeguard them. It's a big issue then.
And the law allows for that to be done, though, doesn't it?
Because of some of the symptoms, people might resort to taking drugs or alcohol to try and control the symptoms. Obviously, they don't help because alcohol's a depressant. We know that.
Yes.
You know, some levels of cannabis and other drugs can bring on drug-induced psychosis. So that makes it even worse. But the individual might not realise anything's wrong. And if you think, you know, obviously through COVID, a lot of people haven't had the support of family and friends. So a lot of people have been isolated. So any, you know, symptoms might have escalated because of that.
Yeah. So I guess we can't really, there's no cure for this, but how is it treated? Is it through medication or are there other things that people can be referred for?
Well, it is treated with a mix of medication and also, you know, talking therapies. I mean, talking therapies is the big thing now. You know, at one time we were all about the medical model, just give people, you know, medication. Then we went on to a more social type model. I mean, it would usually be antipsychotic medication, which will reduce then any psychotic symptoms such as hallucinations, delusions, paranoia, and that's a thought disorder. It'll reduce it, but obviously it's not going to be, that type of medication is not going to be so helpful for treating the symptoms such as the social withdrawal that might come with schizophrenia and the lack of motivation, because people will find it difficult to motivate themselves and their emotions might have changed, so they might be their emotions might have been numbed, and that might be a big change that people may notice. That change in personality. Why I said it's a bit dangerous sometimes to sort of outline what you might see is that sometimes those changes can be to do with something else.
Right.
But it's, you know, we still should be asking the question of somebody.
That's right, and not being afraid to do that
workplace,
as well.
It's important that the work, the company, the employees, they understand more about mental health. And they feel comfortable to talk about it. So there's that transparency.
I think a lot of firms are more clued up to that now, aren't they? I think there's a long way to go. But very often now in large organisations, they will have a mental health champion, somebody that's specifically trained to a degree to offer that support.
Yeah, I mean, we do a lot of work with companies. And, you know, I've got to say, some companies we work with that we go into on a regular basis, they're really supportive. And it's really gratifying to see companies spend that time on supporting, because it is worthwhile. They'll get back much more because people feel valued. I mean, the other thing about medication is that there are often side effects that people don't enjoy. So, you know, people may put on weight, and it can affect libido. So there might be sexual dysfunction. They may be drowsy, lack any energy, all sorts of things. And in some cases, some people develop movements that they can't control. So often people will not take their medication regularly, and obviously that's a worrying time. For some people, they dislike taking medication because they can't remember to take it on a regular basis. So in that case, they might get an injection which is known as a depot. So they might have a fortnightly injection of the medication, which obviously then takes the worry away from them remembering.
Yes.
I think the other thing is that obviously with COVID and services not meeting face-to-face, you know, that has been even more difficult for people with any mental health condition, because they haven't been able to get to see the professionals and any community psychiatric nurse that's been allocated to somebody might not have been able to go out to see them either.
Which would
we do know that things like schizophrenia, really, it is important if people have got support. I mean, any mental health condition, it's better. Recovery is better if there is support.
Well, Sandra, let's go back to medication a minute. Now, we talked about medication. Which, in your opinion, is the better option? A mixture of medication and, you know, sort of one-to-one discussions and things like that? Or is it moving away from medication now more? Which do you think is the better treatment?
I think that there will always be a place for medication in mental health, but it's almost like a bit of a pick and mix in a way. And I think it is. Medication is only one part of schizophrenia treatment. You need something else. Yeah, medication may help with the symptoms, may make it slightly easier for people to manage, but on the other hand, some people might complain that it just numbs their emotions, and a lot of people really don't want to be taking long-term medication. Although, to be fair, you know, we wouldn't probably worry too much if it was for a physical condition. I personally feel that it's a mix of having those talking therapies as well, because I think those are really key to helping somebody accept the diagnosis and accept maybe some limitations. Some people might need to make lifestyle changes. You know, I've known people who've changed their job, so they're not under so much pressure.
Yes.
We know that people need to get plenty of sleep. You know, they're likely to need more sleep when they're on medication.
Sure.
And, you know, taking regular exercise, but if you don't, not motivated, that's very difficult. And if you haven't got that support to help you, you know, things like eating a balanced diet, you know, if people aren't motivated, they're not going to be motivated to go out and shop, are they?
No, that's right. I mean, how common would you say schizophrenia is in the UK at the moment?
I saw something recently, but I think it was a couple of years old, saying there was about 20,000 people world. I think he said worldwide. I mean, if we say 1 in 100, that's, you know, it's a lot of people, really.
Sure.
And if you think about it, it's about the same level for bipolar disorder, which is also comes under the umbrella of psychosis. But I think that's more readily available or understandable or acceptable to the public, bipolar disorder, because we hear about that with people like Stephen Fry and Bill Oddie.
Yes.
You know, yeah. But I always think that schizophrenia is the one word that the public are probably frightened of. And it's that schizo.
Yeah, well, we said at the beginning, or you said, about the stigma, and I mentioned that in my introduction. What kind of sort of stigma does it have, and what do you think we can do to break that down in society?
It's about education, really, and knowledge, and I think, obviously, as generations change, then there's more and more understanding. I mean, you know, we have come a long way, but it's still very baby steps. One of the problems is that the public, because of that, the word schizophrenia, you know, that schizo, psycho connotation, then the public, a lot of people have that idea that somebody with schizophrenia is going to be violent and aggressive. And often that person is more vulnerable because of their condition. They don't want to hurt somebody else. If they're going to hurt anybody, it's going to be themselves. You know, and that's obviously when, you know, maybe that they're in a really bad state.
Sure.
But, you know, sometimes the press will mention it, even if it's not connected with anything particular. If there's been a crime and somebody will just throw it in, you know, that somebody had schizophrenia.
That then fuels the stigma, doesn't it? And then people get the wrong idea.
Well, they do. They do, and I mean, I've spoken to somebody today, and I was just talking about some of the people we work with and the phone calls, and I could see this person was getting a little bit nervous, and I said, "Are you worried?" And then they said, "Yeah, they're worried about I won't have to see people with schizophrenia." Well, you know, I know people with schizophrenia. I know people with paranoid schizophrenia who are working fine, you know. It's about those levels, really.
Yes, yeah. Now, let's move on to Schizophrenia Awareness Day. Tell me about that and what you are hoping to achieve with it.
Well, again, it's just about pushing that message out, I guess. And, you know, I've always said in the past that I could bring six people with schizophrenia into a room and have a big conversation and nobody would even bat an eyelid or think there was anything the matter with them. Mm. Well, is there anything the matter with them? They've just got a condition. You know, it could be high blood pressure, but it happens to be schizophrenia. And I think it's just about having those positive stories.
Yes.
You know, I'm very much on positive stories when I deliver training, because training sometimes around mental health can appear a bit negative. And because I've worked in mental health for a long, long while, I've got lots of scenarios and stories that are positive. Yeah, I've had distressing experiences where people haven't been well, but there are lots of positives, and I think it's all about pushing out the positive message more. And, you know, if people are willing to come forward that have that diagnosis and are happy to talk about things, that's really positive. Also, I do think, I don't know if you've come across the This Is Me campaign, which was launched by the Lord Mayor of London a few years ago and came into the West Midlands, where companies make videos. It's around mental health. So one in particular, PricewaterhouseCoopers, some of their staff talk about, some of their high-level staff talk about their mental health. And I think sometimes when people are actually in business and they have a particular diagnosis, if they're willing to come and talk quite openly, and I know that's going on much more now from conversations I've had recently with companies where, you know, directors have started to talk about their own mental health. And I think it's all these positive messages we need to get out and dispel the myths.
That's what I'm keen to get over.
There's always going to be people with physical health conditions who are going to be hospitalised, same as with mental health.
Yeah.
But, you know, people aren't readily admitted to hospital or sectioned under the Mental Health Act.
No, that's right. Let me just go back to a point that you made at the beginning, and then we'll sum up with schizophrenia. But you were saying that as of the 1st of September, you're going to be known as Black Country Mental Health. Why did you disassociate yourselves away from Mind? Because
it's not exactly disassociating, Clive. We're disaffiliating. It's the same in a way, but I wouldn't want people to get the wrong impression. You know, I mean, I've worked in the Mind organisations for years, and you know, Mind the name is a good brand. However, because we're Dudley Mind, we've been working a lot across the Black Country, and we feel that we now really need to consolidate that work by having a name that actually represents what we do. So we work within the four boroughs of the Black Country, and that's why we've decided to move away. It's really to consolidate the work we do and to enable us to do more. And we'll still be a charity. We'll still have the same charity number, and we'll still provide the same services, but we'll be providing more. So we'll still be having loads of volunteers working with us, and we'll be developing some more peer mentoring groups.
So that's a positive step then, isn't it?
It's definitely a positive step for us. I mean, it hasn't been taken lightly. My trustees have obviously considered it for a long time.
Sure.
And it's the way forward for us. The other thing is, of course, you know, the trusts in the Black Country are joining together. It's into one entity, and we need to really be able to mirror that. And we are based on the Bushyfields Hospital site.
Yes.
You'll probably recall.
Absolutely.
So, it's for the good of the work we do and for us to be able to support more people.
Sure. So how can we find out more about schizophrenia and the work of Dudley Mind, but particularly if somebody thinks that they may have, some of those signs and symptoms that you've talked about, where can we go from here? I know the first step is the GP, certainly, as you've already said, but signpost me to some suitable websites.
Well, I could signpost you to the Mind website, mm-hmm. because obviously Mind have leaflets and booklets on there. Rethink, Sane Line. There's lots of different websites that people can go to. Why I hesitate slightly is, and I won't try and drag this out, but what I say about concentrating on the symptoms and then deciding, oh, they might have this, it's really dangerous for anybody to try and diagnose somebody. But I did have a call a few months ago from somebody who wanted to know what the symptoms might be in their grandchild who was only 8 years old. Mm-hmm. And I did say then, this is extremely dangerous to even think that that's what the child is experiencing.
But you
so
see,
sometimes I think it can be dangerous.
It can,
you know,
I get
say,
that.
A little knowledge.
But what I don't get is how it, you know, if somebody's experiencing this and they're suddenly becoming, say, withdrawn or whatever. To most people, I wouldn't know what to do if somebody here was experiencing that and I didn't do anything about it, or I didn't offer some way of supporting them or spending time with them and understanding them, because I don't understand what those signposts are. Then, you know, yeah. I'm groping in the dark, really.
Yeah. Well, this is what I think we've talked about in the past, Clive, is about the importance of having mental health first aiders in the workplace. Mm-hmm. Because then those people would pick up and have the conversations and then can signpost through to the GP or to any employer assistance programs in the workplace,
sure.
or some companies have got counselling available. But in Dudley, we have the talking therapies, so people can refer to there. But obviously with something like schizophrenia, you know, that needs to go to the mental health team. But for general mental health counselling, talking therapies or Healthy Minds in Wolverhampton.
It's brilliant. So, you know, there is clearly a lot of help and support out there, and reference points as well.
What it is not to be scared of saying that something's wrong.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, if you were experiencing something you'd never experienced before, like hearing voices, you could be terrified.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's why we need to have open transparency in the workplace and generally, where people can just talk openly about how they're feeling.
Sandra Vaughan from Dudley Mind, soon to be Black Country Mental Health. Thank you very much for talking to Friday Night Clive. That is your lot for this episode. You can catch the programme live every Friday night on Black Country Radio from 8 p.m. If you like our podcast, please subscribe by heading to blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcast or wherever you get your podcast from. See you very soon. This is a Black Country Radio podcast presented by Clive Payne and produced by Andy Caddick.